Internet.
A stream online.
TNTRadio.live. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
And welcome to today's News Talk, TNTRadio.live. I'm Basil Valentine, sitting in for David Curtin. Today, Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. A lot of people say this is the start of the summer. Why? Well, because the York Dante meeting gets underway with the Musidora Stakes, amongst other delights up on the Knavesmire. Arguably the best Oaks and Derby trials of the entire season held today and tomorrow and Friday. Of course, it's the Yorkshire Cup. What could be more lovely than summer in Yorkshire and world-class thoroughbred horse racing? Unfortunately, this is today's News Talk, not racing TV. But nevertheless, we enjoy ourselves here just as much. And on today's programme, I'm delighted to say I will be joined by, amongst others, Alex Mitchell, who sadly was injured by the AstraZeneca vaccine, now, of course, withdrawn, supposedly because they've simply got too much of the stuff. Although they have admitted that in rare cases, it causes blood clots, which can, of course, be fatal, or in Alex's case, lead to very severe life-changing injuries. So I'll be talking to him about the cases now making their way through the courts for compensation. Government of the UK, of course, doing their best to wash their hands of all responsibility, but I don't believe it. We'll also be talking to Dr. Gavin Ashenden about the left's troublesome relationship with Christianity. Now, I'm old enough to remember when there was such a thing as Christian socialism. Believe it or not, that socialists felt motivated by God to create a fairer and more equal society. Now it seems what's left of the Church of England is a combination of wokery and archaic ideas. I'd be very interested to hear where David Ashenden feels the church is going, particularly now that Charles has become fidei defensor, the defender of the faith, a direct line of succession since King Henry VIII, of course, famously broke with Rome and established the Church of England over 400 years ago, getting off of 500 years ago now. Also today, I will be joined by a third guest, Jim Barrington, an animal welfare campaigner, who's going to be talking about the race for cheap meat in the supermarkets. We all see those ultra white, pasty looking chickens. I do try and avoid buying them. In fact, here's a hint. I avoid buying ready meals that have chicken in as well, because it's invariably the cheapest sort of chicken. These poor legless creatures, some of whom never see the light of day in their entire lives. It does seem we breed chickens en masse as if they were, inanimate objects, as if they were vegetables, virtually. Very sad. So let's all try and raise the standard of our husbandry rather than engage in this race to the bottom. And I'll be very interested to hear what Jim Barrington has to say about that. But before all that, I'm delighted to say I'm joined, as usual, by our news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, with the latest from the UK, Europe, and around the world. Welcome to the programme, Gemma.
Oh, thank you very much, Basil. Lovely to be working with you on this hump day on a Wednesday. The UK headlines are always my main focus of my work here on TNT. And there's a lot going on in UK politics, especially at the moment. One of the big headlines of this morning here in the UK is that one of the Conservative Party's most senior figures, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, is calling on Rishi Sunak to do a deal with the Reform Party. He's saying that it should offer senior figures in the Reform Party, like Nigel Farage, its honorary president, and Richard Tice, the party's leader and founder, the chance to join the Conservative Party, unite the right is what he's saying this morning, which will ensure a general election victory, probably one that you and I can chew over. Also, unemployment figures out yesterday, which we broke here on TNT in the UK, they're on the rise with apparently fewer jobs around. But today, two senior cabinet ministers said that the unemployed have plenty of opportunities for work. The work and pensions minister said that, and the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, they said they've got plenty of opportunities for work and they need to get off benefits and back into the workforce. Yesterday's figures don't quite bear that out. There are fewer opportunities, many are saying, in the job market in the UK at the moment. And of course, the other big headline of the day, of course, is that sex education is to be banned in schools for any children under the age of 9. And a radical reform of how sex education and gender are taught in schools will be unveiled formally by the Education Secretary tomorrow.
Plenty to unpack there, Gemma. I must admit, I'm surprised by Rees-Mogg's intervention. He wants to make Nigel Farage a minister in the next Conservative government. This is sort of in response to the most recent poll giving Labour a 30-point lead. However, is Sunak the man to lead such a party? He's heavily underwater, 80% disapproving of his job and only 20% approving. I think the Conservatives might be better off conducting one of their usual regicides, chopping off the king's head and replacing him with somebody else rather than doing a deal with reform.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that also in this statement that Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg has come out with today, he talks about a party with Nigel Farage and Richard Tice and other senior reform figures, and also Boris Johnson coming back as a foreign secretary. He's actually gone on record and said that. Yeah, he's gone on record and said that just in the last few hours. And of course, you know, we've got our unelected foreign secretary, another former prime minister, Dodgy Dave, just call me Dave Cameron. And so there obviously is talk of bringing Johnson back into the fold, ostensibly probably to boost what they see as the flagging polls, as you rightly say, and hoping to appeal to the Tory heartland. I mean, Richard Tice at the moment has ruled it out. Previously, he's ruled it out of doing a deal with the Conservatives. And Rishi Sunak has said a vote for reform instead of the Conservatives is effectively putting Keir Starmer in number 10. And there's no doubt the local election results did show how much reform had taken away from the Conservative vote. It didn't put reform in power. It just split the vote. And so I can see where Rees-Mogg is coming from. Unite the right is his mantra this morning here in the UK. But it's the definition of right for some and right for the others, as in right wing. So is he saying this just to grab headlines? Is he really serious? Would it be something Richard Tice and Nigel Farage would consider if they thought it would get them into the corridors of power? But we've seen coalitions before, haven't we? Effectively, this was what this would be. And it started out all wonderful, the bromance between David Cameron and Nick Clegg. But as time went on, David Cameron looked more and more kind of like triumphant, and Nick Clegg just looked like a shadow of his former self. That was the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats. So I don't know. What do you think? You're our political editor here on TNT. Do you think this is a distinct possibility?
One thing that's being possibly mooted is David Cameron returning to the leadership of the Tory party, in spite of the fact that he was the man who instigated Brexit. Now, of course, he's a life peer, sits in the House of Lords, and disgracefully has refused to answer questions from MPs. Because he sits in the Lords, he can answer questions from fellow members of the House of Lords, but such is our arcane and archaic system, he literally cannot enter the House of Commons. He's, you know, forbidden to do so. But he can approach what's called the bar, which is the dividing line between the House of Commons and the House of Lords, last employed by the Duke of Wellington, when he was required to address MPs in the Napoleonic Wars, believe it or not. Since then, we've had very few senior members of government, well, not since the sort of Palmerston era in the middle of the 19th century, who were members of the House of Lords. But David Cameron, Boris Johnson aside, is, for all his faults, and I'm not a fan, he's been making some terrible noises recently, he is nevertheless sort of the most photogenic, shall we say. Dodgy Dave, the old Etonian charm is still intact. So people are suggesting he might come back to lead the Conservative Party. That would almost certainly require him to renounce his life peerage and sit for a seat, you know, campaign for a seat in the House of Commons. in order to become Conservative Party leader again. I wouldn't rule that out. Jacob Rees-Mogg has said he thinks Conservatives need to represent the Brexit people, the very people who gave us their support to give us an 80-seat majority in 2019. But I'm reading at the same time that Brexit border IT outages are delaying imports of perishable items by up to 20 hours, and that the cost of some imported foodstuffs are set to rise by 60% as a result of Brexit. Now, I recently crossed the border into France, and as a non-EU passport holder, I was able to get through customs much quicker than people with EU passports because of much longer queue for them. But that's really very minor compared to the overall effects of Brexit. My point is this, Gemma, I'm wondering if some of the Brexit voters are beginning to wonder whether or not they made the right choice. For all that we're no longer under the jackboot of Ursula von der Leyen, nevertheless, in practical day-to-day terms, it's hard to see many benefits. What do you think?
I agree with you about the imports coming in. I mean, the new Brexit checks are passing the cost on to the consumer, or just many smaller businesses in Europe are just saying, I'm not going to bother importing to the UK. It's too expensive, takes too long now. There's no point. And that summer warning that will lead to food shortages. Now, that's scaremongering tactics. You know, it could happen. It might happen. The usual fear-based driven narratives. But I'm very intrigued of what you said, because I believe this is going to happen. I believe David Cameron will be the next leader of the Conservative Party. In fact, I have a bet with James Freeman on the Freeman Report show on in a few hours' time here on TNT that will happen. He will be the new leader. And James Freeman, a former member of the European Parliament himself for the Brexit Party, is adamant it won't happen. And we have a little wager. So I'm very glad, Basil, that as the TNT's political editor, you agree with me. So that's given me hope on this hump day that I'll be being taken out for dinner by one of my fellow TNT colleagues, because that's the wager we've got.
Very good. It's all the cards are in play, put it that way. I've seen the date November the 15th now being mooted for the general election in Britain as the most likely date. And I wouldn't disagree with that. I think the Conservatives are going to give themselves as long as possible. Now, you mentioned earlier that ministers are attacking the so-called, you know, benefits lifestyle. Hunt and Stride, though, have been accused of gaslighting the public. Always that word these days, gaslighting. I mean, we didn't use it 25 years ago. Basically, it means to try to convince people of a lie, does it not? The Office of National Statistics have revised the estimate of employees on the payroll down by 5,000. Hunt and Stride claiming there's plenty of work out there. But the General Secretary of the TUC, Paul Nowak, says the government should focus on bringing down NHS waiting lists rather than punching down by suggesting unemployment is a lifestyle choice. Well, benefits have risen nowhere near the cost of inflation, or rather nowhere near earnings. It's a decidedly impoverished lifestyle if you choose to take it on benefits. I can't think many people would prefer to do so, Gemma.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, the benefits, it's a barely existing form of support. Interestingly, a story I just covered on Sonia Poulton on The Breakfast Show with Sonia Poulton was about the number of people now using food banks in the UK, which is another big, big headline story this morning. 3 million, record highs. So people are clearly struggling, whether or not in work or not, but the benefits aren't covering the basics. To imply or infer that it's somehow a choice, you know, people are lolling around, having the time of their lives. That isn't the picture here in the UK. It does show that disconnect between the politicians who do come from the elite and very wealthy families and the poor 99% of, you know, us and a lot of the working class British population that just simply can't make ends meet, and benefits is not the answer. But there don't seem to be the jobs. This is the thing. There just don't seem to be the jobs now. Unemployed people are competing more for vacancies than ever before. And it's an easy headline winner. Oh, it's a lifestyle choice. I mean, the Tories do sort of like to pick on the vulnerable, and they don't really address that kind of why so many people are off sick with mental health problems. They said they want to get them back to work, but I think they're scratching the surface of a problem that's very, very big here in the UK, and that's mental health problems on the rise. So people might go back into work for a little bit, forced back in, and then find themselves just not able to cope, and then back out again.
Yes, and I think something like 58% of all people claiming benefits are actually in work as well. You know, for all that the government 25 years more ago now changed the whole nomenclature around benefits from it used to be unemployment benefit, UB40. But that, of course, implied that there was some benefit to being unemployed. So it was changed to job seekers allowance. And it is literally that you're given an allowance so long as you can prove you're actually looking for a job. And swingeing sanctions were introduced, which basically reduced people to destitution if they committed sort of micro transgressions of their job seekers agreement, contract you effectively signed with the government to say that you were going to spend so many hours per week looking for work. Of course, that's different from the I'm depressed, I'm mad, I can't face the world brigade, who have multiplied since Brexit and particularly since the COVID farrago, of course, when so many people stayed at home and I think decided that they couldn't really face the world thereafter. Gemma Cooper, thank you very much indeed for joining me today on the David Curtin programme, and I look forward to seeing you again in a couple of hours' time with Rick Munn.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll be joined by AstraZeneca victim Alex Mitchell for the latest on the court case, which we hope he wins against the government and indeed the people who injured him. We'll be right back.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
So this is essential. We have now the insurance company saying it's a state actor that did it. So it's an act of war. It's not an act of terrorism. So we don't pay. And now we'll see what is officially coming up. I can tell you that this, what we just talked about, was not mentioned in the German mainstream media. This is something that was completely cast aside. We didn't hear about it.
The insurance policy seems, as you said correctly, seems to cover terrorism but not war. So compensation for the plaintiff would only be possible if the attack were considered an act of terrorism but not an act of war. However, this is important, however, even if the insurance covers only terrorism, a distinction has to be made between when a state is involved and when there's no state involvement.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
And welcome back to the David Curtin Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for David today, Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined from Glasgow by Alex Mitchell, one of the victims of the deadly and utterly flawed AstraZeneca so-called vaccine. Welcome to the programme, Alex.
Thank you, Basil. I'd love to say it's a pleasure to join you, but I'm happy to join you.
Well, I hope it's a pleasure of sorts, and you're very welcome to the programme. Now, of course, the AZ so-called vaccine has been in the news this week because AstraZeneca finally withdrawn it from the market, doubtless due to zero demand. I've noticed that it's not being pushed anything like as hard
as it was in terms of the, you know, cost benefit analysis. And of course, you are one of the many people who suffered greatly from it. Does it give you some hope, some heart? Does it strengthen the legal case that it's now finally been taken off the market and they've admitted that it does cause blood clots?
I think all of that has added to how I feel in many ways. It's a huge relief, is the biggest thing, is that knowing that not one single person in this world is going to end up anything like me anymore through this product and this company. That gives me some bit of comfort, validation that we've been screaming for 3 years, because I've been verified and certified for over 3 years as of it. I'm not, you know, I'm undeniable, irrefutable, undeputable. And for 3 years, people like me have been screaming for help and support. And I'm so glad now that the mainstream media are finally, for whatever reason, have decided to acknowledge that people like me exist, because they keep using words like rare and extremely rare. And the numbers that I'm seeing and I'm dealing with and I speak with on a daily basis, it's not there and it's not very rare. It's ridiculous. You know, you were talking earlier on about benefits and Rishi Sunak screaming that he wants people off benefits. What he needs to understand is that his government is responsible for many of us being on benefits. I've never been on benefits before in my life. I've worked all my life and I'll never work again through this. You know, and to totally abandon us. My anger is that they're now recognising that we exist. They've denied us for 3 years. We've existed for 3 years and screaming for help and support. And we're all talking about it, but there is no help and there is no support. It's basic state benefits. And if you're extremely lucky, and I mean 1.7% lucky, you may get the Vaccine Damage Payment Scheme award. Rishi Sunak's knowledge of this subject is horrific, because he stated in live TV that this was a compensation scheme. There's no such a thing as a compensation scheme in the UK. He said that he was going to reach out to Mr. John Watt and Mr. Adam Rowan. He's steadfastly not done so 2 months later. So yeah, I'm getting angry. And I'm getting tired of mainstream media labelling people like me as an anti-vaxxer or a conspiracy theorist. It has to stop, and it has to stop now.
Since the withdrawal of the product last week, has anybody from the so-called mainstream media, the lying corporate media, as I prefer to call it, reached out to you for your personal testimony?
No. One company has reached out to me on the day that it broke, and that was an Indian mainstream media news program over there. In the UK, no, the silence is deafening. Independent media, private media, channels like yourself, alternative media, most interested and have been a lot of them for a long time supporting us in the background. And I want to say to all of them, and I don't just mean this radio station, the media station, I mean all of the independent ones that's helped and gave us a voice, thank you so much so far. But we need more. We need more people to realise that's not just me, it's not just him, it's not just her, it's just not that half a dozen. There's thousands, there's possibly 11,500 people that believe in the last 3 years that this has destroyed their life and their health. That's who has applied to this vaccine damage payment scheme. They believe they're 60% disabled, because you can't apply for it if you don't think you are. So how many are under 60%? Mm-hmm. And we keep using numbers as people. That's 11,500 people whose lives have been destroyed. And the level of trauma and mental health, there's an epidemic of that coming, because we're not getting supplied with any medical or psychological support. So our mental health is destroyed.
For AstraZeneca victims in particular, is there now at least a voluntary organisation? Do you have your own network? Are you working together legally? You know, what's the situation? Because there is at least always the solidarity of fellow sufferers?
Well, there is now three support groups in the UK. There's the VIB UK, and that's mostly the VITs, to be honest. There's UKCV family and the Scottish VIG family. These are three group support groups that have been set up by people like myself. We're now into the thousands in these groups of people supporting each other because we're being silenced, repressed, labelled, censored and abused. Yeah, there's many people out there in organisations, but they're all being set up by the vaccine injured and the bereaved. We're getting no official recognition. The Scottish Government won't even talk to me. I can't even get a politician to acknowledge that this is happening. We've got the opposite. We've still got politicians up here to think it's funny. Put laughing emojis on social media posts, take us to court. You know, I'm getting tired of being labelled as something I'm not. I'm a human being who nearly died, got an amputation, got a vaccine, got brain damage. Certified medically, acknowledged by the UK government. I'm the first living person that the vaccine damage payment scheme acknowledged that this was done by that. And yet I am labelled as an anti-vaxxer or a conspiracy theorist. These people need to go and give their heads a wobble. We've lost 16 people to suicide, Basil. Wow. Because they can't take anymore. Yeah. And I'm not just one of. If I was rare and I was the only one in this planet, that would be a tragedy and a heartbreak in its own. But we have 81 deaths to one condition. Yeah, I'm so glad that now AstraZeneca has been taken to court in America for another reason. We need more of these cases because the government's refusing to acknowledge that we exist. They told us to go litigate. That is costing us money that we don't have because it's a civil action.
Absolutely. And what about the legal situation? Because there are test cases against AstraZeneca currently making their way through the courts, are they not? And although we don't use the term particularly in the UK, surely this is ripe for a class action lawsuit running to many, many millions of pounds.
Yes, I'm part of that class action, so I can't say too much legally other than I'm very confident that we will win this. And obviously our legal team are massively confident because they wouldn't take it on. So, yeah, it has to be done because if they can't change the system, we have to change the law. And the only people who's going to do that is the public.
I mean, one of the outrageous things, of course, was that immunity given to the vaccine manufacturers. And there was, at the time, that meme doing the rounds on social media with somebody being injected with the so-called vaccine and asking the person injecting them, does this give me immunity? To which the medical professional replies, only for the manufacturer, and inverted and bizarre and sort of unfunny, but funny as it was, that really seemed to be the case. But surely no company can get away with killing and maiming thousands of people and not expect to pay the price. I mean, there must be some recourse to law that you can take over and above any temporary allowance given by the government.
Now, the reality is this pharmaceutical company has been fined $1.5 billion in 20 years and committed 32 crimes. That's public records. Why are we taking health information blindly from these? Why is our government doing it? Why did they allow this? Now, the fact is they knew when they set this up and when the pandemic came out, that they'd put nothing in place for this going wrong, and they knew it was going to go wrong. Right. Because the yellow card report system that we have now was set out specifically for this pandemic. And right. For them to say, all they ever did was add two words to an existing 1979 policy, COVID vaccines. That's a sum total of preparation. No special benefits, no pot of money put by, nothing to help support, nothing to put an instant investigations into place. But 3 years down the line, we're still not being researched properly because there's no money to fund it, because there's no interest in it. It's the manifestations of this is disgusting at any level. But morally, above all, these human beings, ordinary human beings, I should never be on this kind of situation. I should never have to be in front of anybody trying to get help and support. It should automatically be put in place for people like me, but it's not.
Well, particularly given the degree of coercion that was placed on people to accept these experimental vaccines. Finally, yeah. Alex, there's a new First Minister in Scotland, John Swinney. I don't expect anything necessarily from him, but do you have a political champion in Holyrood? Is there anybody perhaps from the ALBA party or...
One man stands tall. That man is Neil Hanvey. Now, this man is a very credible politician, but he's also an oncologist, so he's got a very clever medical background and experience. And that man standing beside me, as you know, I'm doing we're having to do a public event to raise funds to try and help the vaccine injured in the second of June in Glasgow. And thankfully, we'll have Neil Hanvey on the stage with us, and we thank him so much for doing that. This is how important it is. We've got politicians giving up their time to come, and eminent doctors and scientists coming to talk to turn trail people. This is what's happening. This is real. This is not false. It's not a conspiracy. You know, please stop this abuse of calling this conspiracy theorists.
Absolutely. So finally, Alex, where and when is the event in Glasgow for our listeners, and how can they get more information?
It's on the 2nd of June in Glasgow at the Classic Grand. If you've gone to my Twitter or X account, AKE2306, you'll find the link in there. Thank you so much for allowing me to say that, because it means so much to us. We need to get so much done. We can't get people help if we don't have money.
Of course. Alex Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you every success in your case and in the future, and look forward to having you on today's New Talk again very soon.
Thank you so much, Basil. I really appreciate it. And so do everyone.
We're going to take a short break now for the headlines. When we come back, food and farming, particularly intensive meat production. Do we really need it? Right back after these headlines.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Let's finish it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken continues to fan the flames of war, taunting Russian President Vladimir Putin during a speech in Ukraine. A prominent Australian politician's accused his own government of covering up mass COVID vaccination deaths in the country. And 3 years after it was introduced, the vaccine mandate that was implemented for health workers in the Australian state of New South Wales will finally be scrapped this week.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the David Curtin Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for David today, Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line now by Jim Bennington, who is a former executive director of the League of Girls Cruel Sports and a very vocal animal rights advocate. Welcome to the programme, James.
Thank you. Could I just correct you? The name's Barrington, but I'm not an animal rights... That's all right. I'm not an animal rights advocate. There is a difference, actually, and we can go into that, but it's animal welfare that I'm concerned about.
Right. Good point, and thank you for correcting me. Let's focus on animal welfare, which is our topic this morning, and in particular with respect to factory farming. I said at the top of the programme, I do try and avoid cheap chicken in particular, because the conditions under which poultry is raised in this country are absolutely abysmal. And indeed, it's invariably that kind of factory produced chicken that finds its way into ready meals and Kentucky Fried restaurants and, you know, all the other commercial uses. So if you can, please enlighten us a little bit about the sort of abysmal life cycle of the average cheap chicken and why supermarkets are endlessly driving down the price.
Well, I suppose the end point is cheapness. That if you can buy what appears to be a chicken for now less than they cost decades ago, then there is an advantage there. I think it comes down to what you're eating as well. I mean, some of these animals are pumped full of growth hormones. They live in for a very short period, but forced to put on weight. The conditions are pretty damned awful, and I'm sorry to see that this is something that appears to be on the increase. I personally am very supportive of our farmers, but when they're squeezed like this and they're forced to take on these processes, then I think that's where we have to part company, because I don't think factory farming, and certainly heavy industrialized farming, works at any level. And by that I mean it doesn't work at the environmental level because of the costs in keeping this artificial lifestyle going, the emissions, the effluent that has to be got rid of, the antibiotics that are pumped into these animals, obviously the welfare of the animals themselves, and the fact that that employment is probably reduced in rural areas because you've got one person doing the job of, say, 10 in traditional farming. So I'm very supportive of farmers, provided they're doing it in the proper farming way.
As a layman, my guess would be that the fault ultimately lies with the supermarkets themselves for demanding endlessly cheaper meat, or also, you know, other aspects of the food production campaigns, not necessarily just supermarkets, but bulk buyers and all the rest of it. And it ultimately comes down to our relationship with the animals themselves, whether we regard chickens as sentient beings worthy of any kind of meaningful existence prior to their arrival on our plates, Jim.
Well, they are sentient beings. And although we may very well, some people might turn their attention away from it, not wanting to think about how that thing arrived on their plate, they should be thinking about it, because the way that it's produced ultimately ends up in them. So this cheap meat is I don't think, very good for humans either. They're probably eating some of the chemicals that are put into these animals to make them safe from diseases, because keeping such large numbers of animals together is problematic from a disease point of view. And so they have to be countered by antibiotics. And of course, the lifestyle of the animal itself, the way that they're handled in some cases, is pretty appalling. And my personal view is that, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes pleasure of eating something in the taste in your mouth, it is just not worth the suffering of an animal that spends its whole life in those conditions. There are all sorts of ways that people can eat meat, and do it, I think, in as humane a way as possible. Personally, I don't eat it, but you there are all sorts of alternatives. Game meat, for example, is very good for you. The animal's living a free existence up to that point, when it's killed, probably killed in the wild as well. It is good for us. So I'm not one of these people who say you've got to become a vegan to care about animal welfare. But I think we should care about how these things arrived on our plates.
Yes, you mentioned taste there. I mean, the mass produced chicken doesn't taste very good anyway. Outdoor reared chicken tastes 10 times better. It costs twice as much. So eat it less often. It's as simple as that. Pigs with their tails docked. How on earth does that improve food production, Jim? I've never heard of that before.
Well, it's a problem when you put these animals together and they become frustrated and they start to fight. And the tail is a nice little thing for another pig to bite at. I mean, some of the methods in these mega farms, these industrialized farms, are pretty damned awful. But we choose not to look at it. But they take the tails,
yes,
so
exactly.
there isn't the thing there to chew. You know, when they're frustrated in and not sort of running around in a field somewhere, scrubbing around in the soil, which is their natural habitat, of course.
Yes, I mean, we have seen in the last 10 or 20 years with the growth of your Waitrose supermarkets and the move towards outdoor reared pork and the finally in the UK, the provenance of our meat products is becoming more widely advertised. But that's very much a middle class thing, isn't it? You know, that's for the Marks and Spencer's shopper. And those that visit the independent butchers, there's still this sort of vast swathe of probably 60-70% of meat production that is done to standards that can only be described as the lowest common denominator.
Absolutely. I think the problem is it comes down to cost. There was an interesting figure that I saw some time ago, I hope that it was true then that years ago, let's say after the war, the Second World War, we spent something like a third of our income on food. That's now gone down to something like 12%. So we're not spending the sort of same amount of money on food, which in a sense was good food as well. It wasn't processed. It didn't come from these. Industrialized farms, and importantly, people knew how to cook, which I'm afraid nowadays a lot of people just don't. They know how to order a takeaway, but they don't know how to cook.
It's a very good point. I mean, you know, it's really multifaceted. This we need cooking lessons in schools. You know, we need perhaps subsidies from government to raise standards of husbandry of animals. And I think we also need legislation against the kind of particularly intense. I mean, I think there's a sort of, a certain amount of cheap meat is required for one reason or another. But there's a basic standard of husbandry which seems to have been abandoned. And I think only legislation, really, and vigorous enforcement by government inspectors will mean, you know, will ensure that we don't get this, as you say, pigs biting each other's tails, chickens unable to ever stand or walk in their entire lives, I believe, is right at the bottom end of the market. Is that right, Jim?
I think that is right, and I think cameras in slaughterhouses helps as well, and increase fines. There was a pretty awful case just a few years ago in England of some appalling pig farming practices, and I believe the fine was something like £4,500. Well, that's nothing. That's nothing.
No.
If you knew that you were going to really get clobbered with a massive fine, then perhaps you'd move away from these things. And I'm not saying that every factory farmer is a bad farmer. There are some acceptable processes, and there are some ordinary farmers that can be equally bad. But generally, I think the problem lies certainly numerically and in conditions with the industrialized factory farming.
Finally, Jim, I can remember the mad cow disease business. And of course, it came out that was partly because cows were eating dead sheep or even in some cases, the remains of other cows. Is that kind of thing still going on? Aren't cows supposed to be vegetarian, live in pasture and eat grass?
Well, there was a case of BSE just recently, and I don't know where that came from, but this is the problem when you're always cutting corners, and I do sympathise with farmers, because certainly in the UK, because they are they are expected, rightly so, to have high welfare standards. But also, we allow cheap imports as well. And I think if we labelled some of this stuff, where it actually comes from, not this nonsense about, well, it was simply bred abroad, and we packaged it in Britain so that we can put a union flag on it. That's just a sort of conning the public, really. But I think if we had proper labelling, where these animals came from, how they were slaughtered, whether they were stunned or not, then at least people can make their own choices. I'm not here to tell people what they should and shouldn't eat, but I think people should have the knowledge to know what they are eating and how it's produced.
Very well put, Jim. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today on today's News Talk. James Barrington.
Thank you, Basil.
We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, I'll be joined by Gavin Ashenden and asking what on earth has happened to Christianity in Britain, once one of the leading forces shaping our nation, now something of an afterthought for most people. We'll be right back.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel. Ordered a coffee, but while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. But then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, mouthed, do you need an ambulance? And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
I tell my son, I love you every single day. Now my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
TNT. This is the David Curtin Show and today's News Talk, TNT.
Hi, Kevin. And welcome back to the David Curtin Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for David. Today, Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. Now, I went to a very religiously orchestrated school and was confirmed in the Church of England at 14 years of age. We had a vibrant Christian union and Christianity seemed central to our national life, but not, it seems, anymore. Now it seems being a practicing Christian can invite ridicule or even opprobrium. And David Campanale was recently hounded during his campaign. Joining me to discuss this and other aspects of the decline of Christianity amongst a barrage of wokeism and other nefarious, shall we say, sinister forces is Gavin Ashenden. Welcome to the programme, Gavin.
Hello, Basil. Good morning.
David Campanale, can you tell us a little bit about what happened to him and why his Christianity seemed to be a problem with his political life?
Yes, well, I ought to declare an interest, as they say sometimes. David's a friend of mine. He used to work as a BBC producer, and indeed we met when I was asked to do a commentary on Prince Philip's funeral on the BBC, and we became friends. He's an enthusiastic and sophisticated Christian. His politics are a bit to the left of mine, so occasionally on Facebook we could have grumbled at each other in a friendly way. And I knew that he wanted a career as a politician to try and play his part in defending our culture. The Lib Dems have got a history of not liking Christianity. They are illiberal liberals. And he discovered that in the local party where he had been selected, there was a degree of what you might have to call Christianophobia. They didn't like the fact he was a Christian. I think this largely comes down to the fact that Christians have different sexual standards than liberal radicals. They seem to be absolutely infuriated that we think that men and women ideally ought to live together in marriage and have children. But however it's expressed, they want to drive anyone with those views out of the public sphere. And I think it's time that we blew the whistle on the hypocrisy and said, all your pretense at inclusion and equality and fair play is just a smokescreen for your hypocrisy. You don't like views from yours. And effectively, you're totalitarians. You want a one-party state with people whose views are acceptable to you.
It does seem that, you know, from being one of the mainstays of our national life, relatively recently, only sort of 40 or 50 years ago, the number of people going to church, and as a result, the general acceptance of what we might call Christian mores and morals, has been in the steepest decline, since the beginning of Christendom, quite frankly. Ireland, for example, has gone, partly as a result of the exposure of the Catholic priest scandal, from being a deeply pious and devout country into one where the Roman Catholic Church is sort of semi-ridiculed and abandoned. In this country, of course, you've now got the head of the Church of England, the defender of the faith, King Charles, who really doesn't seem to be anything like as much of an active Christian as his mother was. Indeed, one could say that the royal family and their behaviours aren't exactly upholding the best traditions of Christianity. And yet, without it, society is in danger of disintegrating because, you know, the very basic tenets of civilization in the West were founded on the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ, Gavin. Without them, we become a rudderless ship.
I think it's easy for Christians to get complacent and to imagine that society ought to be Christian because it has been for some time. But the fact is that there's a competition for values in the public square. And at the moment in Europe, we're facing a struggle between a kind of politicized paganism, which I think is comes from either the left or the right, either communism or fascism, and Islam. Basically, there are three main players in the room: Christianity, Islam, and a form of secularized paganism that attacks Christianity when it can. And the fact is, Christianity is losing, and I think it's partly losing because Christians aren't sufficiently aware of what the stakes are. Muslims are very well aware of it, and they are continuing their encroachment into the West with our encouragement, which is a form of a cultural death wish, and it's just beyond extraordinary. But in the 20th century, both communism and fascism waged war against Christianity and Christian values. And one of the things people haven't realized is that if you allow this form of paganism from the left or the right free reign, the casualty rate is just enormous. The Stalin killed 70 million people. Mao Zedong killed over 90 million people. Hitler did a very good job at destroying his own country and gassing the Jews. We ought to have realized in the 20th century that the stakes are very high. And what I hope is that within the Catholic Church and within the other Christian communities, people will wake up to the danger that they're in. We don't want a repeat of the 20th century, but it looks as though in another form of the narrative, we're going to get it.
Islam, arguably the single biggest threat in terms of its ability to assert its own morals and dogmas ahead of those of Christians, who seem somehow shy about speaking up for what they believe in a way that Muslims are not. The church doesn't seem to have any champions these days. There doesn't seem to be anybody, you know, standing up in public life. Perhaps if there was, they wouldn't even be given a platform and saying, this is what we believe in, this is why, and this is why we need to, you know, promote these ideas and beliefs, Gavin.
Well, you make 3 points, and they're all good ones. Yes, there are a few people standing up for them. Some of us are trying quite hard. But secondly, would they be given the platform? No, we've had our platforms taken away from us. That's the whole point about the David Kampali scandal. And thirdly, Muslims are clearer on their values. They are, but there is an excuse for Christianity in the West. I mean, I don't excuse it entirely, but we've been under an insidious assault from secularism for a very long time. And we made the mistake of giving away far too many of our own principles because we thought perhaps we might accommodate ourselves to a reasonably yes. Not unfriendly society. But it turns out that spiritual and political life are rather more stark than that. If we don't fight for the salvation of souls and the integrity of what we believe, we'll be overcome and thrown out of the public square.
Gavin Dashenden, thank you so much for joining us today on today's News Talk, and I hope to speak to you again very soon, quite possibly on Friday evening.
Thank you, Basil.
I'm Basil Valentine. This has been The David Curtin Show. We do hope you've enjoyed it. Coming up, Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded, and I'll see you all again over there. Bye for now.